welcome to another edition of Money Matters Show 315. Thanks for joining me today. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Welcome to your community radio station. And as always, before we begin, please be advised that the information given on the show is not meant as personal investment advice and should not be construed as investment advice. They are opinion only, my opinion only, and may not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. Indices mentioned, if I mention any stock indices, may not be invested into directly. And I hold California Insurance License OL34249. You're listening to show 315 on our reduced COVID coverage. Show used to be an hour aired live on Tuesday's first... Was it? Now I'm beginning to forget the first and third Thursdays. There we go. First and third Thursdays of the month. But now at noon, and of course now Gavin Newsom, our governor, speaks at noon. So now we are having a reduced version, 29 minutes airing at least originally on the originating station KVMR FM in Nevada City, California at 6:30 p.m. And of course the station is carried and aired, recorded at various times throughout 66 stations nationwide. So can't quite tell where you're hearing it and when, but in any case, right now it's live, of course, right? Okay. So today's show is called Canaries, Elections, Masks, COVID Spikes, and Medicare. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're going to be talking about today. So let's begin with this spike that we're seeing in COVID cases. It's interesting. It could be the second wave that people were expecting. What's interesting is I would imagine about half the people in the nation are wearing masks, and the other half think wearing a mask means you're on the next train to Auschwitz. I'm kind of in the middle there. But despite half the nation or whatever are wearing masks, we're having a resurgence. So I think I voiced my opinion. It may not be the opinion of station you're listening to this on, of course, but my opinion is you're not going to stop. You might slow it down through the use of masks. And I believe that the economics of masks is that if you have it, it's definitely going to help the person around you. As you, when you sneeze, it's not going to come out at 100 miles an hour. The water droplets are going to be caught in the mask. However, if somebody else has it and you're not wearing N95 mask, it's going to go right through yours. So it helps others if you have it. If others have it and you don't, my opinion is it doesn't help. But we have a lot of people in the nation wearing masks, and we're seeing a spike in cases again. So you have to wonder whether this wearing of masks is helping. I'm sure it's helping. My wife is Asian, and in Japan, when they have a cold. So I think that's what I'm saying is, if you have a cold, or if you have a flu, or this virus that is floating around, and you're wearing a mask, that helps others. Stopping it from getting into you, unless you have an N95, I think it's called. But in any case, we're seeing these COVID spikes again. Can't tell if it's a seasonal thing, the second wave, or, you know, I'm just of the opinion you're not going to stop this thing. I mean, we may slow it down so you don't overload the hospitals. And I think that's what they meant by flattening the curve. So, but I think everybody eventually is either going to get exposed, or the science points to about a herd immunity of around 65-70%, and the virus infects less people than it exposes, and it slowly dies out. And hopefully it won't mutate into more deadly strains. So we'll see. So people have asked me, you know, we're coming up to the election, and we went into the COVID event. We shut down the economy, and I think I was well-spoken that my opinion of we should have never shut down the economy, never. And the common belief now is that it was a mistake to shut down the economy. At least some believe that. And the reason I think a lot more people believe it than are willing to admit is that because they're saying they're not going to shut it down again. So here we've got rising COVID cases, spiking COVID cases, and they're opening up anyway. So I think everybody's realizing, shutting down is not really a good thing. Too many people are going to be hurt. We are seeing not only businesses hurt, we're seeing it is estimated that 30,000 people we'll starve to death with every reduction of 1% in GDP. Underdeveloped nations don't have a lot of money. And, of course, when they are hurting economically, we have normally people starve at the rate of 5,000 or 6,000 a day. Anyway, so with a COVID shutdown, you're going to put a lot of stress on these underdeveloped nations, and we're going to probably see triple or quadruple the spikes in starvation. It's not basically from me, that's coming from the World Economic Association, that they kind of agree that we're going to see a lot of mass starvation. Also kind of under the radar is for domestic violence, suicides, depression, drug abuse, kids staying home, joining gangs, hitting the liquor cabinet. Not all kids can stay at home and have parents to help them study online. So we are seeing a spike in depression and suicides and spousal abuse and drug addiction and all sorts of things that are coming from people staying home. And it was very sad news came out here, at least in this county. A very influential person that runs one of the nonprofits here, her 16-year-old son became despondent over not seeing his friend, and he committed suicide, and that was really devastating. So the statistics for that are real. So seeing as this is a market show, we're going to talk about the markets and, you know, in the light of all these unfortunate statistics that are around. And although many people assume the stock markets will react at the day of an event, in actuality, the markets are said to look ahead about 6 months or more. For example, the COVID event has been a great example of the markets looking ahead in this astounding rally that we've seen after the first 3 weeks of panic relating to the outbreak of the virus. The first 3 weeks of March, as you probably know, witnessed a brutal sell-off in the markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, known as the Dow, dropped about 38% from an all-time high of around 29,500 and some change, and dropped all the way down to the low 18,000s, about a 38% whopping. And it only took 3 weeks. It had been on a new high about 8 weeks prior to the first week of March. And so it went from new high to 18,000. So it was cut by 40% in a stunningly rapid fashion. From then on, in the third week of March, the indexes turned up and plowed almost relentlessly higher, despite the fact that the world, we were in just in the beginning stages of COVID in the third week of March, but the market turned the third week of March and headed straight up. Even without the definitive end to COVID, and we still don't even know when it's going to end, investors started buying up stocks in this almost unbelievable and monumental rally that took us all the way up to about 28,000, almost all the way back to a new high. Keeping in mind the event is still not over, we don't know when it's going to be over, and no one can say for sure when it will end, the market's rebound was indeed perplexing to many investors and experts. However, in reality, the snapback may have been anticipated. Investors have been simply assuming the inevitable. The virus will end at some point. And after the first 3 weeks of destruction in the markets in the first, second, and third week of March, I think investors were looking at that it was inevitable that the virus will end. Whether a vaccine is found or COVID simply exhausts itself through mutation or herd immunity, it will end. At that point, the pent-up demand from shut-in and stir-crazy consumers will probably pour out into the economy in a rapid fashion, causing a similar yet surprising explosion in demand. That's what people are anticipating. This may translate to a rapid bottom line growth and profits to the businesses that actually survive the event. Many businesses, as you know, have gone under, will go under, and the businesses that survive will glean more customers from those that can no longer go to those businesses that are no longer there. Remember, Wall Street loves its comparisons from quarter to quarter, from year to year, and the rise in sales compared to the anemic COVID shutdown economy, the rise in sales when we open up, have a vaccine, or the virus goes away, will no doubt set some records in comparison. This is what Wall Street has visualized since the shutdowns began, and it's likely the reason the March sell-off, which was a panic for 3 weeks, quickly turned into a buying frenzy. Once the panic subsided, Wall Street looked ahead to the recovery. With the election upon us now, another spot of weakness hit the markets in recent months. The last 6 or 8 weeks have seen some pretty scary downturns, wicked sell-offs, followed by bipolar-like rebounds. So the volatility is just off the charts. The weeks leading up to election day may have been especially damaging to some portfolios. This could lead, however, to another example of how the market's looking ahead. Further than the occurrence of the event happening on a specific day, the markets are looking ahead. I am of the opinion that the market's latest hissy fits, many of them in the last 2-3 months, is not so much a concern about who will be elected, but the uncertainty of the event itself. Wall Street has pretty much prepared itself for the election of either candidate, trust me. They know that either Trump or Biden can be elected. And so knowing it will be either one, Unlike a Bernie Sanders White House, which I can comfortably say Wall Street did fear, a Biden presidency no longer scares Wall Street much. And a Trump presidency, I don't think Wall Street's too concerned about that either. I think they know there's going to be some civil unrest, but as a general rule, they've accepted one or either one of these two gentlemen can win. The rumor is that the talk that takes place when a new president is sworn in, they sit him down and they discuss things. They tell him things that he didn't know, right? The talk. So the talk encompasses probably the nuclear football, right? That's the briefcase that contains the red button. Dead alien invasions or alien invasions, secret bunkers, and other clandestine and lurid facts that the public best not be made aware of, right? He's probably told some things that they don't tell us when he's elected. Among the discussions to the new president will also be what can and cannot be done to the big money centers of the world and the big money players. In other words, they're going to say, I know you had plans to do this to the money centers, to the money people. You're not going to do that. And this is usually put forth in a way that may be much more than suggestion, if you know what I mean. This part is my conjecture, of course, my opinion. I predict that the current market nervousness may be like the Gulf stock war markets of Operation Desert Storm. Remember that? Prior to Desert Storm, we didn't know when we were going to invade and what would happen. The markets feared the coming war action and sold off in the days and weeks preceding the war. But when the shooting actually started, the markets took off as the uncertainty of war gave way to the certainty of it. I suspect it will be the same with the election. I suspect that the volatility that we've been seeing will shortly come to an end. We'll be right back with a little bit more information after this short musical interlude. Welcome back to your edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniverti, carried on about 66 stations nationwide. Thanks for joining me today. I've written a couple of articles in the last 15 years or so addressing the changing environment of retail sales. First article was called The Death of Retail, which I penned in 07. I forecast the collapsing of mom-and-pop stores as a result of big box stores like Costco and Walmart. The next article I wrote in 2017 called The Death of the Big Box, where I changed gears a little bit, detailing online outlets pressuring the big box stores, much like big box pressured mom and pop, the online retailers, you know who they are. The latest article I penned in early of this year followed up on the death of the big box, notating the ongoing battle for customers between big box and online retailers, and how big box stores were setting up their own online conduits to compete with the online giants. In other words, the big box stores were using online selling as well to compete with the giants of online, of course. One example of an online competition from a big box store is Walmart. Walmart's online presence has given Amazon a run for its money. I also detailed in the last two articles, coupled with the online retailer struggles, the commercial real estate property markets would also suffer as both mom-and-pop stores and the big-box stores vacated their leased properties. The COVID-19 shutdowns have only exacerbated the exodus from retail commercial locations. That said, I found it an easy conclusion that the commercial real estate market will be in serious trouble even if a vaccine is found and the country reopens. My opinion, of course. I had forecasted from the beginning, 25% of all U.S. businesses are done for. CNN claims 60% of closed businesses that are closed now will not reopen. I think 25% of all businesses will go under. They just can't recover. That's the long and short of it. Along with the businesses that have closed and the property owners that find themselves in financial straits due to the vacating tenants that have rented their properties, there was a moratorium on evictions. And this has put landlords of both commercial and residential properties under even more duress. Without debating the politics of these decrees, whether it's right or wrong, to instigate an eviction hiatus, the combination of the eviction hiatus, the online competition, Tenet's vacating. Can spell, in my opinion, once again, I forecast is going to be a real problem for commercial property marketplace. Although many have preferred to buy local and support our community. I went through an exercise, not willingly, about why we buy online. I was looking for one of those large squeegees to squeegee some asphalt sealer down my driveway. And I didn't think to go online. I went local to two hardware stores. One was a local chain and one was a big box that was here. I spent over 30 minutes driving, parking, going inside to discover both were out of stock. I then called two more stores in the driveway of one, and that resulted in 5 minutes on hold, only to find out that everybody in my town was out of stock. So I threw up my hands. I'd wasted about 45 minutes, half gallon of gas, went home, spent 3 minutes locating and ordering the item online, which will arrive in 3 days with no shipping. So, need I say more, and can you blame me? I tried. I really tried. Adding more worry for investors, there's something called a REIT, a real estate investor trust. These are favorites, or kind of were favorites, for income portfolios. REITs were companies you could buy that were publicly traded, and they paid sizable dividends and distributions, making the yields very attractive, so they were popular. Since the shutdown, however, many of these REITs, real estate investment trusts, have been hammered. As investors drew the same conclusion I did, many stores will be closing and a lot of renters aren't paying. The devastation heaped on American small business due to the shutdowns is unprecedented. In a creative destructive moment, a capitalistic event, creative destruction, this will benefit the largest of corporate retailers who have enough deep pockets to weather a shutdown when the smaller competitors go under. They will take over their retail outlets, they will steal their customers, and they will renegotiate their rents lower due to decreased demand. The large corporate franchises will grow even larger because of the shutdowns. I'm not saying that's a good thing. Creative destruction from capitalism is a good thing. But in this particular case, creative destruction in this particular case is going to make big corporations even bigger. Small and moms are going the way of the dodo. Much like farming. You used to have individual farmers that would farm. Now they've all consolidated into these big farming conglomerates. They just can't compete. It's what we call in economics economies of scale. The bigger you are, the cheaper you can make things. So the combination of all these events, the shutdowns, the eviction hiatus, going to online retailers, concentrating the purchases in these online retailers, means that something wicked this way comes for the commercial real estate market. And I would sum up my opinion of the commercial real estate market, not necessarily the big box stores or mom and pop stores or online retailers. I'm just talking about the places that retail stores rent, commercial real estate. I wouldn't touch any part of it, even with somebody else's 10-foot pole. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We're going to take a quick break, and we will talk about Medicare. And welcome back to Money Matters. Thanks for joining me. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Money Matters is carried on about 66 stations nationwide, originating at KVMR-FM in Nevada City. And so show is played, recorded, pre-recorded, live, depending on where you are. So can't tell when you're going to be hearing this. But market indices may be mentioned when I do the show live, may be different when you hear the show. So thanks for joining me. And our website is moneymanagerradio.com, where everything is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And you can hear past shows there. So a particular interest to me is Medicare, because Medicare time is upon me, which I don't like to admit. I am a licensed insurance agent, so I can write policies myself as a disclosure, but I'm going to be writing my own policy. And I thought maybe that'd be a good idea. And although Medicare is part of my continued education, my life and health insurance certifications from the California Department of Insurance, the brief material that they give to me there on Medicare was not enough for me to make an educated selection. Medicare is pretty involved, you know. I don't know how many people have been through it out there, but when you come to it, there's a lot of choices. So what I did is I joined up with an insurer who offers the supplements. Now they are giving me educational materials to make me an expert, I guess. Many people reach the qualifying age of 65, and since I am very close to that age, I asked people that have Medicare what plans they selected. Maybe they could give me some insight on what plans I could select. To my surprise, many don't know what exact Medicare options they've selected. That being said, it makes me wonder why so many people don't know what they have. Either they're not taking adequate time to learn what Medicare is, and I don't blame them because there's a lot of material there, or whoever they are asking for help is not explaining the options very well. Whatever the case may be, understanding the basics and what is available is time well spent, in my opinion. Medicare has gone through many changes. There are the government basic plans offered direct through the government, and then the supplemental plans that fill in the holes that the government plans don't cover. Those are usually called Medigap, and there's a special one called MediAdvantage. These fill in the holes not offered by plans A and B, which are the standard plans you first get. A is free for the most part, and B you pay for depending on income. Different plans and the Medigap plans could then fill in the holes of an individual situation. To begin with, all plans are designated by alphabetical letters. A, B, there's C, there's D, and there's others. Medicare Part A and B are the government-offered coverages, and everyone starts usually with these. Generally speaking, A is for hospitalization needs and generally covers inpatient hospital stays, skilled nursing care, hospice care, and limited home health care services. B takes it a step farther, and again, you pay for that, unless you need financial help, but you pay for that based on your income. B is for doctor needs, helps pay for services like doctors, healthcare providers, outpatient care, home health care, durable medical equipment, and some preventive services. A is free, like I mentioned, for the most part, but can have some payments like deductibles. B is not free, depending on an income that you make, and like A, can also have required out-of-pocket medical expenses. The rest of the parts of Medicare you must buy through private insurers, gap policies. The good news is these insurers that sell these gap policies must adhere to certain guidelines set by the government. In simple terms, once you get these two basic policies from the government, A and B, and you get those direct from the government, then you go looking for a gap policy if you need additional coverage like drug coverage or other special things that you might need for your situation. Or you go for the hybrid Medicare Advantage Part C. But you don't get both supplementals and C. Kind of complicated, I know. Which plan and options you can choose is also dependent on where you live. So it's not as simple as picking a plan A, B, C. It sounds confusing, and that's what I thought. And truth be told, it's probably why the many folks I talked to didn't know exactly what it is they bought. It's just so complicated. Many variations, many upgrades. It's very, very complicated. Although the government stipulated plan benefits must be identical, in other words, you buy a, let's say, a G plan or an N plan, they're identical from whoever you buy it from. But the government makes them identical, but doesn't mean, didn't make the insurers have to sell them for the same price. So you can get a G plan or an N plan and pay a different price from a different medical insurer. So in other words, you could pay more for the exact same plan depending on where you buy it. Depending upon how many ills you have, how sick you are, how often you go to the doctor, how many prescriptions you have, pre-existing conditions, if you want to keep your current medical providers or not, and how much you want to pay in monthly premiums or your out-of-pocket expenses, what your expectations are, this will all lead you in the direction of selecting the best plan for your situation. To select the best and most affordable plan for your situation, I do believe that's possible. I've selected what I think is the best situation for me, but it did require some hours spent in front of the computer for me because I'm trying to get certified in this. It's going to spend a lot more hours than you have to spend. So that's not a good thing for me, but for you it is. A medical specialist insurance agent will also help you with your final determination. Although special circumstances special circumstances may mean automatic enrollment and age exceptions for some. In other words, for some people under the age of 65 could be enrolled anyway. As a general rule, there's an enrollment period that starts 3 months prior to your 65th birthday, the month of your 65th birthday, and ends 3 months after the month of that birthday. So there's a 7-month window. It's important to remember, because during that window of 7 months, there will be no medical questions, pre-existing condition questions. So there's a window there where it's like a free pass. You can get into Medicare in that window of 7 months for the most part without being denied. You are guaranteed acceptance. If you miss the window, all sorts of other things happen. They can ask you questions. They can jack around your price. So it's not a good idea to miss your window. There are some exceptions to that. If you're enrolled early because you have pre-existing conditions that are deemed as special conditions or some other particular items. Also, if you have a medical plan where you work and you're not enrolling in Medicare, you can wait until that plan goes away and then they can put you in that way. Missing this enrollment period can lead to problems for some, so don't overlook it. You likely won't have to be reminded that you're coming to age 65, as you will be fully aware of it, as I was. And also your post office box, your mailbox, will fill with solicitations from Medicare sellers. The only way a Medicare seller can petition you to sell, they have to do it through mail or they can't do it unless they can, but there are very strict instructions and very strict regulations on how they can approach you. So you can get them in mail. They can just blindly mail out stuff. But other than that, things like unsolicited phone calls and everything can't be done. It's very strict on how you can market Medicare. Like I said, missing this enrollment period can lead to problems, so don't overlook that. Your mailbox is always going to fill with stuff. And as always, watch for scams and double-check everything before you buy, as changing plans later, let's say you pick an N or a G plan, and then you want to change it later, it can have some restrictions and some costs. Newbies can start like I did by going to Medicare.gov. Okay, we'll be right back with the conclusion of the show. You've been listening to Money Matters Show 315. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabritti. Thanks for joining me today. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show 315. And don't forget, opinions on the show are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of the station, its staff, management, or underwriters. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. This show is not to be taken as individual investment advice. Investing involves risk, and you can lose money, including total loss of principal. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Past shows and our newsletter are available on the website, or you can email the program director at your radio station to contact me about comments and suggestions on the show. My name is Mark Cunabritti. Thanks for listening to this edition of Money.